As counsel are approaching on the next matter, I'll identify it's the second of four oral arguments we have today. Judges Cochran and Cleary joining me, Judge Sleater, in the second matter, file A240850. I'm going to identify the respondent as Persolvent, since that's what they're doing business as, and everyone's naming it rather than Bruber Financial Services versus Arik Software, Inc., who's the appellant. We do ask counsel, because we're recording these proceedings, to make sure to identify yourself for the record when you approach the podium and before you begin your comments. You'll see the, well, there's both a button for higher and lower of the podium itself on the front facing, I believe it is. And then on the upper right, perhaps it is, or somewhere on the right side is the time as well. So you'll have an idea on where you're at. We do ask that you keep an eye on that. And as I mentioned, the recording and live streaming we're doing, the recording audio will be available on the court's website within 24 hours, should you, your clients, or anyone interested citizen wish to listen to it. And so, when ready, counsel for appellant, you may approach and begin.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Aaron Gott of Bona Law, and I represent Arik Software, Inc. And we are here today asking you to dissolve a temporary injunction that has no basis in law. We're now in the third iteration of this injunction. What happened is the district court reinterpreted an amended injunction. The amended injunction had imposed a new duty. It was a duty not to solicit. That duty didn't exist as a matter of law. It did so in that amended injunction order after admitting that the original injunction imposed a different duty, a duty not to compete, that also did not exist as a matter of law. In reinterpreting that amended injunction at an off-record conference, the district court reimposed a duty not to compete as to current customers.
Counsel, when you say reinterpret, I know this is part of the disputed argument whether it actually does reinterpret it, and I understand your point about in the main order it says do not solicit, I believe is the language there, but part of what I think the most recent district court appealed order explained was the memo that the court used in that amended order, and the part I have in front of me is it does not negate the court's earlier finding that allowing defendant to compete for business with current Elio customers will mean an end to Elio and the loss of plaintiff's goodwill of its customers. That seems pretty clear from that reading that the judge was intending no competition with the current Elio customers.
Well, Your Honor,
not just not soliciting, but if they would call your client, that was no longer, that was still prohibited.
Our reply brief goes through in detail the analyzing the memorandum, but I think if you take a step back from that for a moment, the district court was quite clear in its order what it was doing. It said, "Do not solicit," and if you have to go through the memorandum and parse what it meant by do not solicit, that's already a problem. The district court...
Go ahead, Judge.
But what is at issue here is the interpretation of the language do not solicit, correct?
That's one issue here, Your Honor.
Yeah. And so in your in considering the judge's clarification of that language, do we give any deference to the district court's interpretation of its own order language?
No, Your Honor. An injunction order has to be clear on its face in order to be enforceable. And if you have to read the memorandum in order to interpret that, and especially here, If you take a look at our reply brief, we walk through all of the language of the memorandum. And if you look at that language, the district court actually states what it's balancing. And what it states it's balancing is AREC's right to compete for the business of Elio customers with Persolvent's hold on the goodwill for those customers.
Counsel, so, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I mean, the gist of your argument is that a non-solicitation requirement became a non-compete requirement. Is that what you're arguing?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. But that isn't really accurate, is it? Because you can still compete and market your business to entities that are not current customers via law, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. So it's not truly a non-compete.
It is a non-compete, but it's a non-compete that's specific to those current customers. It's just not a broad non-compete that covers the entire market.
Or is it a clarification of how you handle ELO customers?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Is the court just trying to clarify how you handle current ELO customers as opposed to non-ELO?
With the off-record guidance, the court was what it was doing was it was taking the word solicit, and it was saying what I meant by the word solicit was you can't sell to LEO customers. Those customers are forbidden from moving to your new software product. Notwithstanding the use of the word solicit in the order, those customers cannot move to the new software product. That's what the district court did at the off-record conference, Your Honor. And so if you're balancing two things, and the district court said it was balancing those two things. It said, on the one hand, AREC has a right to compete in the market, full stop. It has the right to compete for customers that are not, or potential customers that are not LEO customers, and it has the right to compete for LEO customers. Assuming that AREC was a partner, it was undisputed that it disassociated from that partnership, and that means it could compete for any customer in the world. So what the district court had to do was balance that right with Persolvent's alleged hold on goodwill of the LEO customers. If it's balancing AREC's right to compete for those customers with Persolvent's hold on the goodwill of those customers, then it has to meet somewhere in the middle. The middle can't be that AREC can't compete for those customers. It would have to be that it simply can't solicit them, because otherwise you're not meeting in the middle.
Mr. Gott, was the first order,
go ahead.
Did the first order, am I correct, that part of the reason you wanted, your client brought the motion to narrow its focus was it was non-competing for any customers outside, including outside of Elio, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So even though you don't agree that the solicit, the whole order with the memorandum meant both to solicit and seek and to basically compete, isn't it true that that second order did narrow the first order? And that is what the judge meant by the middle of the road, because obviously instead of the whole world, now it's just the Elio customers. That would be a significant narrowing from that first order.
Well, it's not the middle of the road, Your Honor. Now, the district court already recognized in that order that AREC had no duty not to compete. So we're starting back at.
But that was the second order, right?
Right.
In other words, because of the dissociation of the partnership, and that was part of the court recognizing that error from the first order. So the point being is, in any event, it was a much narrower non-compete in that second order, just not as narrow as your client would have, are now arguing would have wanted.
Yes,
but not broader, because they had brought a motion again to go back the other direction. I make it stronger, I believe.
Right. What the district court did was it said, "You're right, AREC. I overlooked the fact that the complaint actually alleges that AREC dissociated before, if there was a partnership, AREC dissociated before this litigation started. So if it had a duty not to compete, it no longer has that duty. So I shouldn't have granted an injunction that says you can't compete." What the district court then did instead was it said, but Persolvent, if its allegations are correct, Persolvent may have a hold on customer goodwill. So I'm going to balance that right with your right to compete. That's what the district court did.
Would it be true if ever you get to the point of litigating whether there actually was a partnership or not, and if your client wins on that, then there may be a money damages for any loss of not competing with the LEO customers?
That's correct, Your Honor. There would be. In the meantime, there are significant restraints on my client. And by the way, my client is, the district court has found as a matter of law that my client has a right to compete, full stop, in the market. On the other hand, the district court hasn't found that Persolvent has any goodwill. Persolvent still has to prove that. We're at a preliminary stage here. But that's not been taken account in any balancing. It's just Persolvent has goodwill versus AROX's right to compete. And that's not how injunctions are supposed to work. What I'd like to focus on for a little bit here is the standard for dissolving an injunction. Now, there is the changed circumstances standard, but a court can also dissolve an injunction for any good reason, any reason where it's equitable to do so. And a temporary injunction is not a set it and forget it device. Temporary injunctions are an extraordinary remedy, and they should only be awarded in clear cases, reasonably free from doubt. The Minnesota Supreme Court said that in AMF Pinspotters versus Harkins Bowling.
So would you agree that we apply the abuse of discretion standard to the district court's decision not to dissolve the finding that there weren't changed circumstances and to not dissolve the injunction?
Your Honor, the abuse of discretion standard applies to a motion to dissolve an injunction. However, there are two caveats to that. The first is any decisions, any legal questions that are decided within that decision are subject to de novo review. Any errors of
But
any
whether there's
of law,
a good reason to dissolve an injunction, that isn't a legal question.
That's correct, Your Honor. Well, it can be. There could be a legal question.
Hypothetically, yes.
Yeah.
But
And there certainly could be. Like, for example, when the district court holds an off-record conference that imposes a market allocation scheme on a market that affects public schools that completely tips the balance of the public interest factor under Dahlberg, when the district court decides that market allocation scheme actually improves competition or keeps the competition dynamic in place, that is legally erroneous because there's a statute passed by the Minnesota legislature that says that that's actually against public policy. That would be legally erroneous, and I don't think that that is entitled to any deference whatsoever.
Is the statute you're referring to 325D.53?
Yes, I believe so, Your Honor.
And how does the temporary injunction fit within the language of that statute?
So the actual language of the amended injunction, which says do not solicit, does not fit within that statute because it says do not solicit. But what the effect of the off-record guidance that the district court gave in November of 2023 is that AROX and Persolvent actually uses in its brief, I believe it's on page 16. Yes, page 16. Persolvent says the amended injunction, quote, prohibits selling AROX app to current LEO customers. That is market allocation. Now, AROX never agreed to that, so it's not market allocation in the antitrust violation sense. But that doesn't matter to the customers. The customers are still subject to the exact same perniciously anti-competitive harm that they would be if Persolvent and AROX had agreed to that. So that's the exact same anti-competitive evil that the legislature was trying to get to that. And it doesn't matter whether it was imposed by two competitors or whether it was imposed by a district court in Hennepin County. And these are public school districts throughout Minnesota that represent more than 90% of Minnesota taxpayers, as well as a whole bunch of school districts outside of Minnesota. And I just don't think that a district court in Hennepin County should be making that decision for them.
Counsel, what's the significance of this being a temporary injunction as opposed to a permanent one? Isn't the court's obligation to preserve the status quo pending resolution?
Well, the question of the status quo, Your Honor, is...
I realize that begs the question.
Yeah, the biggest question of what the status quo is. If you look at the Persolvent's motion for temporary injunction, Persolvent, at the very beginning of that motion, said there is a contract between AREX and Persolvent that says AREX has the right to compete as of December 31st, 2022. But AREX and Persolvent are actually in a partnership, so the court should prevent AREX from competing because of that. Now, it turns out that AREX disassociated from that partnership, and that's how we got to the amended injunction, and the district court never really revisited any of that. And that's the problem with being overeager about entering a temporary injunction in the first place. That's why they should only be granted in clear cases reasonably free from doubt. And so the status quo is school districts should have the right to choose what software products they want to use. And right now, Minnesota public school districts, representing over 90% of Minnesota taxpayers, cannot get the best software on the market, even though they want to do so. And I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
And indeed, you will have 5 minutes of rebuttal. Thank you, counsel. And counsel for respondent, when you're ready, you may approach, identify yourself, and then begin.
May it please the court, my name is Anne Rondoni Tavernier, and I represent the respondent, Persolvent. Your Honors, before I begin my substantive remarks, I'd just like to briefly acknowledge that I believe the district court has not transmitted the full record as of yet to the Court of Appeals. To the degree it would be helpful, once that record has been transmitted, we'd be happy to either update our citations to the appellate index or provide a cross-reference guide if that would be helpful. Persolvent is here today with the distinct sense of deja vu. Persolvent has heard and responded to these arguments from AREX several times. And the most recent time that the district court heard these arguments, the district court found that they were, quote, a veiled attempt at a motion for reconsideration rather than a change of circumstances, end quote. And that finding is important because it points us to the one issue that is on appeal today. Not the arguments that AREX has litigated and which have been disposed of below, but the one record, the one issue that is properly here on appeal, and that is this. Did the district court abuse its discretion when it found no changed circumstances justified dissolving the injunction? And the answer to that is no. All of AREX's arguments assume that the amended injunction was changed after the district court entered the amended injunction order on June 8, 2023. But that is not the case. There has been no order amending or modifying the amended injunction. It has remained the same since June 8, 2023 to now. And AREX knows that, because AREX was the party that requested the amended injunction in the first place. And AREX specifically requested the narrowed scope of the injunction that it now claims is wrongful, a narrowing of the non-compete to only LEO customers. AREX's primary argument is that the injunction was incorrectly interpreted by the court in an off-the-record conference. But the district court is entitled to interpret its own order. And
do we owe any deference to the district court's interpretation of its...
Yes. Yes. Under La Chapelle versus Mitten, 607 Northwest 2nd, 151, Minnesota Court of Appeals case 2000, this court stated that the Court of Appeals, quote, defers to a district court's interpretation of its own order. And that case, in turn, cites Makota versus Makota, which states, on appeal, the trial court's construction of its own decree has great weight.
How do you respond to appellant's argument that an injunction has to be clear on its face and the amended injunction wasn't clear on its face? And therefore, we don't defer to the district court's interpretation of the language that's at issue here.
I think that the plain language of the order itself reflects that it is clear on its face. The procedural posture around it confirms that. The amended injunction itself on the very first page, which is addendum page 14, in paragraph 2 states, defendant's request to clarify or limit the temporary injunction is granted. So AREX would know that its alternative relief of requesting a non-compete only to LEO customers was granted. And then in paragraph 4, the court states, the attached memorandum is incorporated herein. And as this court noted just a few minutes ago on addendum page 18, the court makes very clear the scope of what its order is. The court states that its earlier finding that allowing defendant to compete for business with earlier with current LEO customers will mean an end to LEO, and that that finding stands, and that the court is only, quote, freeing defendant to market its business to entities that are not current customers of LEO. And the very last line of that memorandum says, defendant is allowed to, quote, engage in such limited competition as described. That's clear on its face. And to the extent that AREX argues now that it's unclear, AREX is contradicting its own interpretation of the injunction. After the amended injunction was entered on June 8th, Persolvent filed a motion for reconsideration. And in response to that motion for reconsideration, AREX explicitly stated its understanding that it was not allowed to compete for LEO customers. So this belated argument that the order is unclear contradicts not only the plain language of the order itself, but AREX's own prior statements in the record.
Isn't it true, counsel, you do have to read the memorandum and even that quoted language that you have doesn't come right out and says it does talk about the harms if one was able to if one does compete with Elio. But the fact is on the order page, it does simply say solicit. And so if you stopped at that point, number one, it lends to the appellant's argument that solicitation is different than competing. And couldn't we presume that if the court intended to compete, it would have said may not compete instead of may not solicit?
I disagree with that reading of paragraph 2. Paragraph 2 says that defendant is temporarily enjoined from soliciting any current customers of the LEO branded or marketed software or from taking any action that would undermine those customers' ability to continue to use and enjoy the LEO branded software. It's broader than just the word solicit. That's in one sentence. And again, if a party only stopped reading an order after one sentence, I think there will be a lot of confusion about orders in the future. We have to read the order in its entirety. And when we construe court orders, when we look at a court's interpretation, we do look at the order in its entirety. We don't just look
at
one word.
Might be in that second half, gets more in the realm of the broader category of may not compete. Usually
yes.
You say may not compete in any way or do anything that would compete.
Yes.
That's your point if you read the two together.
Exactly. And to the extent that you continue reading the entire order, we see that the memorandum is incorporated, and the memorandum makes that clear. The last line of the memorandum states that defendant is only free to engage in the limited competition described just a sentence above. This is not an unreasonable or parsing interpretation. This is, in fact, manifestly reasonable because AREX itself understood the order to mean just this, which it confirmed just a few weeks after the order was, in fact, entered. And given the fact that under controlling case law, we do afford great weight and deference to the district court's interpretation of its own order. AREX's after-the-fact construction of confusion and ambiguity contradicts not only that standard of deference and great weight, but as I stated, also its own prior statements in the record. With respect to this standard here, AREX is mistaken when it stated that the standard for dissolving an injunction is any good reason. The standard of review is clear and it's been long established, and I believe both the district court and Persolvent cited Jacobson versus County of Goodhue, which states, it is well established that courts have the inherent power to modify, amend or vacate an injunction where circumstances have changed and it is just and equitable to do so. Here, the district court didn't even need to get to that second part, considering whether it was just and equitable to do so, because AREX did not establish that there were, in fact, changed circumstances. Because, again, here, the order that is at issue has been the same for over a year. So that is the standard that we're looking at today in terms of what was decided below. I also would like to correct AREX's statement that the court has found that there is no right not to compete. Now, to be clear, this court doesn't need to reach the underlying merits of competition or partnership law because that is beyond the scope of review today. All we're looking at is changed circumstances. But AREX is incorrect that the court has made a specific finding that that AREX has the right to compete full stop. In fact, the district court just heard summary judgment arguments on that very argument about 3 weeks ago. So that is incorrect. Beyond the district court's own interpretation of its record that found no changed circumstances, which is amply supported by the record, the only other issues that AREX raises here are legal questions. But all of the legal questions that AREX raises relate to the underlying basis of the injunction, and they have been waived. Waiver is a voluntary relinquishment of a known right. And AREX relinquished its right to appeal the basis for the injunction when it voluntarily dismissed its appeal of the injunction well over a year ago. So between the plain text of the order itself and AREX's prior appeal, this court need look no further to affirm the district court's order. At the end of the day, this is an effort to relitigate an injunction that AREX requested, that it itself wanted and received, and which has been the same since it was entered on June 8th, 2023. If the court has no further questions, I will yield my remaining time.
It appears to be done. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Counsel for appellant, you'll now have 5 minutes.
Rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. AREX never requested any injunction. It just wants to build amazing software and compete in the marketplace without Persolvent. AREX hasn't waived anything. When the original injunction was issued, AREX requested a stay pending appeal. And it requested an entire stay. But as an alternative, it requested that the district court either stay, a partial stay, or to clarify that the non-compete applied only to LEO customers. The district court did none of the things that AREX asked for. Instead of doing that, the district court amended the injunction. And instead of amending it and saying that AREX couldn't compete for LEO customers, it said AREX could not solicit LEO customers. Those are two fundamentally different things. And when the district court did that, it essentially mooted AREX's appeal. For one thing, AREX no longer had the same arguments on appeal. It did not have the same likelihood of success on appeal. The balance of harms was completely different. AREX no longer had an argument that its company was going to go under. It could compete for all the other customers in the marketplace. It couldn't solicit current LEO customers, but if those customers approached it, it could still sell to them. AREX had no reason to believe that this court would interpret the word solicit to mean anything other than solicit at the time. And the goodwill argument itself was entirely different under the amended injunction. While the goodwill that Persolvent has under non-compete is impenetrable, it's got some holes in it under non-solicit. Customers could still leave. They could still come to AREX, but they'd have to do it on their own. AREX can't actively solicit them. So the upshot of that is AREX was faced with an appeal because of an amended injunction that just didn't seem like it was likely to succeed. And AREX could live with the amended injunction. If it couldn't solicit current customers, that was fine. It would focus on new business, And if those customers came to it, then it was happy to sign them up. But the amended injunction became a problem when that non-solicit became a non-compete. As to the motion for reconsideration.
Just to clarify, counsel, that again ties in, if we were to agree with you or to the original order, and that's where the parties are differing, that there was a change, there was no change. Because if there's no change, then of course, then the forfeiture point on those other issues related to that first order would be appropriate. Right?
But I think that that explains the argument that there was no change that Persolvent is making is based on AROC's understood all along, and I'm trying to explain to you that that's actually not the case, and that's a misconstruction of the record.
I see.
And then there's a reference to a letter response to a motion for reconsideration. I'm the antitrust lawyer for AROC. I had ACL surgery. I think 2 days before that response was due. I didn't write that letter, so I can't speak to that. But I know what the word solicit means, and I know what the word compete means, and they don't mean the same thing. The other thing I wanted to mention is the district court was hyper-focused on the changed circumstances standard, and it was focused on a very strict reading of that. It's not a strict standard, but the district court never got to the equity question. It never got to whether there's any good reason. It was really just focused on what adjective to assign to what the district court did at the off-record conference. And for context there, the judge who decided the motion to dissolve was a different judge that decided both the original injunction, the amended injunction, and sat at the off-record conference. Judge Moore was the first one, and then Judge Sandy took over the case later on. And Judge Sandy never got to whether there is any good reason. So I think the fact that he never even got to that is an independent basis for an abuse of discretion. And with that, Your Honors, I conclude my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both, counsel. We appreciate your answers to our questions, the briefing, and we will take the matter under advisement, issue a ruling within 90 days. You have a good day.